Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris. He's found him via the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Glovers Cast. It's the morning after the afternoon before, and I'm joined by Ian and Ben to talk about a 2-0 home defeat to Notts County. Sorry to start on a bit of a downer, but how are we this morning, gentlemen?
I feel like I've gone 11 rounds with Tyson Fury.
Oh, well, topical. You've done better than some.
Very topical reference to start off the podcast, yes.
There you go. Yeah. You're not lying on the floor. That's the best thing, then.
I've slept on it, and I think I want another night to sleep on it, maybe, but...
You don't get that.
No, there's too many.
No. There's and once again, we didn't give the listeners another night, did we? We were just straight in there.
Disgraceful.
So I'll blame myself for this one, whereas I blame Ian for the last one.
Yeah, Coates is our new social media...
Editor.
Head of social for the Glovers Cast.
Good
except,
luck with
except,
that.
Except Instagram.
Yeah, except Instagram. I can't do pictures. So, yes. Well, Ian, you're in the hot seat for this one. Because it sounds slightly warmer than the Tuesday night seat anyway. So, in terms of temperature, it looked like a glorious day to be at Hewish Park.
If anything, it was too hot. You know, when you go to a game, you think, oh, I'll take a coat because it'll chill, you know, it'll chill down. It just ended up being my coat. I may as well have taken a bag to put all my stuff in because my coat hung on the seat next to me. And it was...
Is it not full, the seat next to you?
I was on my own. There's actually one of the guys from the Trust sent me a picture. It was like spotted and sent me a picture and it's literally me surrounded by green and white seats.
There you go. Well, it's nice to have company.
Wow.
Plastic supporters.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think, yeah, you're in the hot seat because you were the one of the three of us who was there for your sins, which yes. I don't know what you've done, but it must have been pretty bad. But
yeah, I got
two.
So
go on then. Tell us, what did you think?
Oh, I thought it was awful.
You said that about Tuesday, so at Maidenhead. So
I think in the context of things, Maidenhead felt worse at the time because it was, they had 10 men for the last 20 minutes there. They weren't in form and they're, you know, really they're the type of team that we should be beating if, you know, we are what the owner and the players tell us we're going to be. When they sign and say there's no reason we can't reach the playoffs, etc., etc. I think against Notts County, you know, they're a team that should be towards the top of the table. They're a good quality team. They had some good players. They had some nice, they had nice patterns of play. But we just, all that defensive impetus that we showed against Halifax, that we probably showed against Stockport, not letting teams breathe on the ball, all that has gone. We were passive. We just let them knock it around, and they took risks, and they played the ball into spaces where our midfielders weren't willing to do that, really. They had some tricky players, and sort of everything that we saw from the first few games seems to have just gone. Don't know what we can put that down to. Probably, like, feels odd, but probably the loss of Luke Wilkinson at the moment is the biggest thing that sort of affected us, in that it's broken up that partnership between Gorman and Staunton that was sort of protecting the back line. And we're now sort of chopping and changing things a bit, which we didn't do at the start. We sort of had a settled side and we're playing for each other. And I'm not really sure why we're doing that. I don't know. If the selection felt, you know, on Tuesday we played Mitch Rose. Say what you want about that decision. If you're going to play Mitch Rose and you want him to play in centre midfield, then he needs to play again the game after. I don't think you change it up if you're going to persist with it. I think we were. Yeah, the overall feeling was we were too passive. We let them have the ball, and they had some real quality up front. Rodriguez was a very, very good player, and Aaron Demain as well caused problems, particularly in the first half. He was really giving Moss trouble, and that was probably the first game where Moss has struggled and looked like he wasn't, you know, wasn't quite on it. He's been very impressive as a signing for us, but yeah, yesterday I think he got caught out, and Max Hunt as well on the first goal. They sort of just managed to wander past him, really, and put it away. I don't know if you've seen the goals. I don't know if they were on BT Sport last night. Or
I didn't see him. There's some bloody boxing match on instead. So,
yeah, the goal, the first goal was sort of very easy. Just strolled past Hunt and took a left footed shot. I think it caught a little deflection. It didn't look major from where I was, but I was sort of side on, so difficult to tell. And then the second goal was a free header from a corner, which, you know, those are unforgivable, really.
He's not a sizable player, is he, Rodriguez? I don't think so. Giving him a free header from a corner.
Well, I think it's a bit deceptive. He's quite tall.
Is he?
But he's long.
Quite tall, but he's long.
Yeah, he's got a bit of. He's not. He's long and skinny.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. But he was good. I thought Cal Roberts was good. It could have been four. He had a great chance in the second half where it sort of looked like he got caught between what he wanted to do. He didn't know whether to put it across goal for a teammate or shoot. And then he sort of did both. But he was in after being set up by Rodriguez. That should have been a goal. Then they also had an opportunity in the first half where it was probably like 4-on-3 situation where they tried to just be a little bit too fancy. And we sort of recovered, but that could have been, you know, it could have easily been four yesterday.
There feels like there's quite a lot to unpack there. But the couple of things that stand out for me was you referred to that Stockport game. And obviously, Dave, you and I were there. And coming into this Notts County game, I had the same feeling as I had going into the Stockport game of there's no easy time to play a club like Notts County. There's no easy time to play a club like Stockport. They're full of quality players. You've name-checked a couple. One of the journalists on the press conference on Thursday name-checked Ruben Rodriguez. I don't remember who that was. Can you remember who that might have been? Oh, no, that's right.
I wouldn't call him a journalist, but yeah.
the job title.
Very modest fella. So
yeah, whoever it is. Whoever it is, he asked some wonderful questions, but he name-checked Ruben Rodriguez. They had that, you know, Stockport had those players in Paddy Madden, in John Rooney. We did it a little bit to Halifax with Matty Warburton. But Stockport went into the game full of quality, but bang out of form. Notts County had lost three on the spin, conceded seven in two. And did they start with a back three as well yesterday, Ian?
No, it was a four.
Was it a four? It sounded like a three at times on radio. Maybe I was sort of imagining things wrong, but the way we set up tactically against Stockport was that we knew where we were going to be strong and we knew where they were going to be strong, and we nullified their strengths and we knew how we were going to be dangerous. And so I had that feeling of, this isn't going to be easy, but if I could pick or choose a time to play Notts County, it's when they've conceded seven, when defensively they're at sixes and sevens, when they're considering bringing out their 40-year-old assistant manager out of retirement to try and shore things up a bit and make their midfield a bit bitey. And we've laid down for them. Laid down for them. We've not landed a shot. We've not landed a single shot until the 85th minute. We didn't get a corner the entire game. We've got reasonable set piece takers. We've got 9'9" Max Hunt and Josh Staunton and players who can cause trouble at set pieces. Joe Quigley. We haven't got a single corner. Not once have we managed to get to the byline and whip a crossing that's just knocked out harmlessly for a corner to be able to set and put together a set piece. That for me is pretty much unforgivable, considering at Stockport, we rocked up there with the arrogance that said, actually, we're going to play a front four, stuff you, and we're going to get in behind, and you're going to not like this one bit, and you're going to have to make first half substitutions, and you're going to have to take people off at half time and change the way you do things. Away at Stockport, that is arrogant, that is ballsy. But then to do that in front of your home crowd against a side coming into things in a similar vein of form, respect their quality, respect Ruben Rodriguez, good player. Respect Namain, good player. Respect Wootton, O'Brien, good experienced players. But give them hell. Get at them. Make them not want to think about you. Make them worry about you the whole time. It sounds to me like we were, well, the manager himself said weak. We weren't making attacking threats at all. I the first time I realised who was playing centre-back for Notts County was when I looked at it this morning.
Yeah,
I didn't hear their name once.
No, and he pretty much, Cameron, wasn't it? He pretty much had, he was almost like he was their Perlo. Like he was so not under pressure that he was able to like control things from the back for everyone else to then build up the pitch. He was, he had a very easy afternoon.
And that has to be, that for me is unforgivable. And I is it a tactics thing? I'm quite happy to shout out when things are tactically amazing. I called Darren Sahl a potential man of the match after Stockport, the podcast that he accidentally listened to, apparently. So he would have loved that.
I wonder he's still talking to you after
I'm gonna say, yeah, interview. I'll be honest with you. if he's accidentally listened to this one, he's probably not gonna be overly enamored by it all, because I think he tactically got yesterday completely and utterly wrong.
He called his team like a mouth without teeth, which was quite a vivid description, but I know what he's saying. Soft, soft, dross, he was saying, but yeah. Well, Ian, tell me something, because as we all know, I'm the tactical ignoramus amongst the three of us. But tell me what the difference between Boreham Wood away, and I know Boreham, because even with 10 men away at Boreham Wood, I felt like we were still going for it. We were still attacking them. And Boreham Wood were a decent side. They were in a bit of form when we saw them. But we still carved out quite a number of chances. Okay, we didn't score any of them in the second half at Boreham Wood. What was the difference between what you saw Tuesday and Saturday versus that at Boreham Wood? What had changed in that? I know I'm not a listener, so I shouldn't be asking questions. But
you're allowed to.
But I didn't listen to the facts.
Yeah, I don't know what's changed. I don't know.
That's good. That
do you know?
Sucks.
Do you know? No, but do you know what I mean? Like, personnel-wise, not a lot's changed.
No.
We've signed a player.
Yeah.
Who we don't know, but has that unsettled things?
Which one? Which player?
Well, which coach? Yeah, the controversial one. Like, it feels, I mean, this is total, absolute wild speculation, but we've taken out Jordan Barnett, who has been arguably one of our better players who's come in. for Robinson, who I don't know what he gives so far from the two games I've seen him. He's your bog standard left back. He's happy to sit there. He doesn't get forward like Barnett does. He's just
Barnett's a rally the troops kind of guy.
Yeah.
When you're 0-0, when you're 1-0 down and you've sucked up 10 minutes of pressure, Barnett's going to clatter somebody into row Z and he's going to get the crowd going. And he's going to fist pump and he's going to jump into the crowd when we score.
And against his old team yesterday as well.
For me, that's one of the things. When I said earlier that I think Darren Sahl got it tactically wrong, I think that was one of the big ones for me. Because it's not just that he's a rally crier. He's not just someone that gets people going. He had, and again, I can only really refer to the Stockport game, he had a wonderful working relationship with his winger, whoever it was, whether it was Knowles or Wakefield in front of him. He could get further forward and just gives that extra freedom. Tom Knowles hasn't got to put his head over his shoulder to look where his fullback is because he's in front of him.
Yeah,
he's gone on. And for me, that was just that attacking freedom that it offered you. Because you've got Phil and Grant sitting, you almost have four central defenders and your fullbacks are just tall. Because Dan Moss did the same on the other side. Just crack on and just go, it's fine. Yeah. We've essentially got four centre-backs in Gorman, Staunton, and then whoever the actual two centre-backs are. Barnett gives you that freedom, gives you that outlet.
I mean,
gives you that rally cry moment. And it feels like it was missing. You need someone just to grab the game by the scruff of the neck or produce a moment. And Barnett's been that person. Robinson, he'll be fine. I'm sure he'll have a decent football career with him. But Barnett at the moment is without question, if he's fit, he should be playing for me.
Yeah, he's not a bad, you know, Robinson is not a bad fullback. He's technically sound. You know, he's very capable, but he doesn't have that edge. He's beige, I would describe him, man. He's a beige fullback. And I'm not saying that Jordan Barnett is... The reason we're not winning games is because we're not playing Jordan Barnett. But I question, has something happened in the last couple of weeks since that Boreham Wood match that has changed the atmosphere? Or... Because it feels like a totally different... It feels like a totally different team on that pitch, even though it's pretty much the same personnel. Tom Knowles was hauled off at halftime yesterday. He, you know, that's not the Tom Knowles I fell in love with.
What have you changed, Tom? What have you done? Heartbreaker.
He's being asked to do a different job than he was the end of last season. But, you know, he's not performing. Quigley, I know he scored a couple of goals, but the others were penalties. But he's a bit lost.
Isolated, lonely. Would you go with that front? He just doesn't look like he's got anybody with him.
Yeah, I think so. No, people. Yeah, the wingers didn't get near him. And as harsh as it sounds, Sonny's a bit of a passenger at the moment. He doesn't. We're not getting him on the ball. And when the ball does come near him, he's pushed off it by a bigger defender or a bigger midfielder. He's just not, I don't know, whether it's the way that we're set up doesn't allow him that freedom, or I'm not sure. I texted you yesterday and said it was the most Darren Way-esque performance I've seen, in that we were just knocking it down the channels and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
That's
the most damning thing, isn't it? That's the most damning thing.
And passing it to, you know, passing it to one player, but not really thinking, oh, what's that player going to be able to do with it once he's got the ball? It's like, oh, I'll pass it to him. Oh, shit, he's surrounded by three people and now he can't do anything with it. There's no... Yeah, it was... it was tough.
Is it confidence? The manager obviously spoke after the Tuesday night game about needing to be positive and young players, you know, needing support and not feeling confident. Obviously, he was slightly more robust in his thoughts after the game.
So that's fine. You can say those things.
Yeah.
But then he didn't use Adi Youssef at all, his most experienced frontman. He brought Mitch Rose on late on in the game. Now, look, I've not had the chance to talk about Mitch Rose yet. I don't want him anywhere near my football club. That's fine. I don't want him anywhere near my football club. But apparently the manager does. Darren Sahl does. He's got a wealth of Football League experience. He is... you know, he's used all these delightful phrases that he's a leader. He's come in to help replace Wilkinson's leadership and all the rest of it. Well, why bring him on for 10, 15 minutes at the back end for Dale Gorman? Why not keep playing him? I don't want him anywhere near the football club. Let's get that completely straight. I don't want him anywhere near. And as soon as his month's up, I want him gone ASAP. But if you've got, if the manager's clearly happy to use him, the manager isn't worried about the off-the-field stuff and wants to help him sort of go through that. But he's not being used. And he's brought Dale Gorman off to, yeah, it seems strange for me. I think, personally, I think maybe we'll touch on it and how the Altrincham lineup looks, because we'll talk about the fact that he said he's going to make changes. He's going to try and shuffle the pack a bit. So maybe we'll talk about it. But for me, you've got to go back to the things that gave you that freedom to be attacking against Halifax, to be attacking against Stockport, to have a go. And that was just freeing up, you know, your attacking players to have the freedom of Hewish Park and just say go.
I think that substitution was pretty damning, that we were 1-0 down at that time and we took off Gorman is a safe player, but I would say he's, of him and Worthington, he's the more forward thinking than Worthington is. I think to take him off and bring on a defensive midfielder rather than bring on Adi Youssef.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought when I heard it. Why is he bringing him on? Yeah. What's he going to give you going forward?
And we brought Ben Seymour on, and again, we were brighter. He had a decent chance. He had the type of chance Reece Murphy would have scored. I think he was a bright spark when he came on. But at 1-0 down, to bring on a defensive midfielder was shocking. I think Gorman was all right. He didn't. There was no injury. There was no real issues there. I don't know. It was not the change that I thought we needed. And that was our last sub as well. That was the last one. We had no other options. And it was kept the same. We didn't change shape. We didn't try anything differently. Like, I think if you make a change where you bring on a striker, and then so you've got Quigley, Seymour, and you've got Youssef on the pitch, as well as Charlie Wakefield and Dion Pereira, you've then, at least it looks like you're throwing everything at it to try and get a result here.
But what did we have to lose at that point? What did we have to lose?
Well, yeah, not a lot. And I think, you know, we should probably talk about Pereira as well, because he was another player who was probably, you know, he came out with a little bit of credit. He showed some nice little touches. He was forward thinking, but it didn't look like we played to his strengths. I'd like to see him in behind Quigley. I'd like to see him close together. Our best real opportunity in the first half came from them having a little bit of a 1-2 and couldn't quite get a shot off, but he's got something about him. Wears his socks low like Neufeld as well, so there's that.
You'd play him centrally rather than on the wing?
Yeah, I think I would. Either him or Knowles needs to be in behind Joe Quigley at the moment, because that area of the pitch is just pointless now. Yeah. There's no real... There's nothing being created for them.
So based on what you said there, can I ask you a question? Do we think Sonny's time is up? Because I thought yesterday, after the Stockport game, we spoke about how he looked decent at Stockport because he was surrounded by players who maybe, you know, were the same technical ability as him. And I thought, when I heard Paul, not Pete, from the Notts County podcast, sorry, Paul, talk about them as the Manchester City of the National League, I did think to myself that this is a game for Sonny. You know, maybe it is a game where he's got those kind of opposing players who might give him the chance to be the player that we know he can be, but didn't sound like he did have. So I just wonder, what is he going to bring to us? Is he on a season-long loan, or is it till January? January, isn't it?
Half season, yeah.
Yeah, we don't do anything. Don't have any long-term planning, do we? So it must be January.
I'm not convinced.
No.
for the same reason that we were unwilling to play Gabby Rogers in games, because we thought he was a bit lightweight. And I would say that Gabby Rogers had more about him physically than Sonny does. Like, I think it's, yeah. This is, you know, when we sign players like, we were talking about this last night, you know, when we signed players like Stephen Colker, mm-hmm. and we signed players like Liam Walsh, and those players who come in at 17, 18, and they look like they've been playing men's football forever. They are just ready, and they are the complete package.
He's not that.
He is not that.
No.
And, you know, when we've had young players before, the manager's always said how, you know, he needs experience and he doesn't like to put young players in these games if they're not particularly ready. But we're doing it now. And, you know, this is another thing that he keeps saying, how we all wanted a young team.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I don't remember demanding a young team. And I don't
Now, there were a lot of people who talked about, oh, you know, the aging Charlie Lee and Carl Dickinson, and oh, we got a bunch of pensioners. And if you go on Facebook, there were people who were saying that. That was not, we all wanted a young team. That, to me, is code for, in the press conference that Ben was at, asking his fantastic questions, he said, and I think he said this to you, actually, Ben, the manager. He said, let's not beat around the bush about it, when he was talking about play, and then didn't say what he meant. What he clearly meant was, we've got no money. We've got no money, so we're having to buy all these kids. That's what he meant. We've got no money. We've got no one who's interested in investing any money. We're borrowing money hand over fist, and we've got no one who's, we've got nothing to do anything with it. That is what Darren Searle didn't want to beat around the bush about, but then didn't say. That's the reason, isn't it? That's the reason why we're not bringing in these players.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thought, let's, you know, we put a poll out about the older players, didn't we? About who, well, it was Jimmy Smith and Charlie Lee, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think
people said they wanted both.
Yeah, and some people said they wanted just Jimmy Smith. Yeah. And I don't think we expected the mass exodus in the way that it happened, in losing Dicko, Dagnall, Charlie Lee, Jimmy Smith, Reece Murphy, Lee Collins passing away. You know, that was a hell of a lot to lose. And I'm not saying that we wanted all of those players, but they were obviously on Football League wages from when we came down. And it is abundantly clear that we've not got that level of finance, that level of player at the moment.
Just to bring it back to Sonny then, I keep thinking to myself that this loan deal is going to really, really benefit Sonny. He's going to go back to Watford and be a darn sight better player, because he'll have learnt about real football. He'll have learnt about Jim O'Brien booting him up in the air and defenders giving him half a second. And he'll grow as a result of this. That doesn't benefit Yeovil one iota. Benefits Sonny Blue Low Everton a load. And he will go on. I'm telling you now, he's going to be one of those players that comes back on loan for a championship club and scores against us in the FA Cup in about 3 or 4 years' time. Absolutely nailed on. He will go on and have a really good career, Sonny Blue Low Everton. And we will look back on him and go, oh, yeah, we had him for a bit, didn't we? Daniel Johnson up at Preston. Oh, yeah, we had him, didn't we? Oh, yeah, he was all right. He was a bit weedy. He was all right, wasn't he? Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. You know what I mean? He's going to be one of those. He really is. I'm a big fan of Sonny Blue Low, and he's going to learn a darn sight from this loan spell. We're just not going to benefit from it, I think. And that's horrible to say. But I think he's going to be a much, much better player.
And I've got, you know, there's, for me, there's a wider conversation about the loans. I don't know if we had any questions, but we've got a player in Alex Bradley who last season was pretty good.
Yep.
You know, and I thought he was one of our, you know, he's one of the players that we've signed who looks like he might go somewhere and be a good asset for us. But Little gets injured. We bring in a loan rather than, I know he had COVID, didn't he? So he wasn't back because of that. But it feels like now we've put all our eggs in the Dan Moss basket and Alex Bradley's being left to the side, but he's a contracted player. And I think it goes for the same on the other side in Jordan Barnett's a contracted player, and now we're prioritising Jack Robinson over it. And that is a concern for me because we've got seven loans and contracted players who aren't even in the match day squad.
It's not unheard of for loan players to have it written or to have gentlemen's agreement that they play.
Yeah,
it's not unheard of. We've had it at the club here in the past. We've had it. Shane Duffy had to play regardless if he was fit. He had to play. Doesn't matter. Ismail Miller was another one at that time. They had to play. It was written in their contracts that they had to play. Form doesn't matter. It's not unheard of. It does happen. It is sometimes written down. It is sometimes wink, wink, nod, nod. Yes, you can have this player at a reduced rate, but they start every game. If that's applied to Moss or Robinson, then maybe that could be part of the reason. I don't have a problem with Moss at all. I don't really have much of a problem with Robinson, but I do agree with you that I to not even have Alex Bradley on the bench yesterday was strange. We've gone from a period of having four subs game one to having players that you go, you've left him out, you're completely out. Very, very odd. So, I think I agree with you there. Maybe this is sort of the link forward to the talk about Altrincham, but he said he's going to ring changes. In terms of the Beam or Barrett here, but if you had to keep three or four from that team, because we can probably only, you know, we're not going to make 11 changes, are we? We're going to make three or four changes. So who were the guys that came out of that game yesterday with any credit that you are absolutely nailing onto the team sheet come Tuesday night, Ian?
Josh Staunton.
Yes.
I mean, he got sponsors man of the match two games in a row, which just goes to show the type of football we're playing at the moment.
Yeah.
Because you don't really want your centre-backs getting man of the match. I think Staunton...
Would you keep him in the back?
I don't think we have a choice.
Okay.
Unless we sign Maldini.
We could have a chance of him.
Unless Skivo comes in. I think Staunton has to start at the back. I think one of the things that, you know, was a pretty, said it all yesterday, was there were times where Josh Staunton was running past the centre midfield to try and make things happen further up the pitch. And I think when your centre back's doing that, it says a lot about what you've got in those positions. I think Staunton, I think Charlie Wakefield did well when he came on. I think probably Dion Pereira should get another shot. It's hard to know what I honestly don't think he'll make that many changes.
I'm not asking what you think he's... That's a separate question. What changes are you making?
The manager?
No, nope.
I'm joking. Yeah, the manager. That's what changed him.
Oh, God, he's opened the door. Oh, can of worms.
No, worms.
Everywhere.
There's worms.
Worms everywhere.
I'd bring in Barnett.
Yep.
I'd bring in Bradley so that we've got that fullback that might try and get forward.
In place of Moss?
Yeah.
Okay. Give us 11. Come on.
Then, okay, Smith, Bradley, Staunton, Hunt and Barnett. Partly because then you've got a back five who are contracted to the club that you need to get playing together and have a relationship with each other. Have a solid back five that are yours.
Something which we were crying out for last season, by the way.
Yeah. And we've got that. We've got that on the books. I think I'd go Wakefield.
4-4-2 this, or are we going 2?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we've got the quality centrally to...
Without Staunton in there.
Yeah. I think I go... I don't know what to do. Gorman and Worthington are the same player.
Okay.
Yesterday, Worthington was... It was, where's my fullback? And give it to the fullback.
all day.
But that's fine if you've got fullbacks that are doing fullback things. That's fine. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with sideways
and backwards, which, you know, I say it every week how we need Ed Upson.
Yeah.
We need that midfielder. So, I don't know. I feel like I want to see Simper, but I don't think we're ever going to see him. I think the only game I'm going to see Jordan Lewis Simper play for Yeovil is Taunton Town away in a pre-season friendly. I don't think he'll be back.
Is this you getting round to putting Mitch Rose in?
I don't think he gives us anything. We haven't got a centre midfielder who'll give us anything going forward.
So then I'm thinking
Ed Upson's there. Paolo Maldini's at the back. Right, okay, fine.
So I'm thinking Wakefield and... It just sounds like the same as what Darren Sarr's done already, really. But I think we need Knowles or Dion Pereira in behind Seymour.
Oh. On his own up front?
I think we need to try Seymour or Youssef up front and not... And just give Quigley a
You still break. Haven't finished off your midfield yet. Don't worry about who's up front.
Well, the midfield is going to be the Ginger Duo and... Yeah, Wakefield, Ginger Duo, either Knowles or Dion Pereira on the left, or Knowles and Dion Pereira behind. Let's go Dion Pereira behind Seymour.
Wow, okay.
Because we're shite going forward. We need to change it going forward, and that is two new players who are fresh into the group. Who we haven't seen a lot of. Seymour runs and runs and runs. He chases everything down. He's not Paddy Madden, but he's that type of Gary Johnson striker who chases things down all the game. Which, you know, I think is important to have when you've got centre-backs who can just stroll around and knock it around how they like, which is what Notts County did, which is what Chesterfield did. Yeah, that's the changes I think I make.
Fair enough.
How many of them did you have then, Ben?
Well, I'm taking Staunton out of the defence. He's got to come out. He's got to go back
in.
I'm putting Dyer in there. If he's the only one we've got, I'd rather have the umming and ahhing, I don't know what to do, I'm not really sure what we've got, who's this, who's that, conversation that Ian's just had about centre midfield. I'm having that same conversation, but I'm having it at centre back. And I'm just putting Dyer in there. Putting Dyer in there alongside Hunt. And I'm going to keep the rest. I agree with you. Smith, Bradley, Hunt, Dyer, Barnett. I'm bringing Staunton and Gorman back together to allow everyone else that freedom. They're still playing holding roles. Staunton's going to spend as much time looking over his shoulder, chatting to his centre-backs as anything else. But he's just going to allow that freedom to keep those creative players quiet. And I feel really harsh, but I am going to take Worthington out. Not because he's done an awful lot wrong, but I want to get that partnership back to where it was against Halifax and against Stockport and get those two back together. So it's Smith, Brad, Dyer, Hunt, Barnett. And then I'm going to keep Wakefield on, Phil and Grant in the middle, and then Pereira on the left. I am going to bring Adi Youssef in. I'm going to play Youssef and Seymour up front. That's how I'm going to do it. And I'm just going to tell Wakefield, Pereira, Youssef and Seymour, just go. Be a front four. Get out their fullbacks.
Yeah.
Tell them it's okay. Don't worry about the defence because we've got Barnett and Bradley who are perfectly adequate at doing what they can do and can get forward and can help. And then you've got Phil and Grant just marshalling and organising and playing the role of almost quarterbacks and just dictating play and breaking stuff up and frustrating them. Get back to that two in the middle. That block of four big brutes, two horrible centre-backs, two horrible centre midfielders, and just let everyone else kind of have freedom and go. Because that's what did it at Stockport. That's what frustrated Halifax to the point where the angry little black current said that we were going to bully them. That's what they were on about. Yesterday, we got bullied. It's time for us to start bullying some people again. Because this is going to be easy.
We didn't really get bullied, to be honest with you. We didn't get near them to be bullied.
We just handed over the lunch money. They didn't even have to wedgie us or peanut the tie for them to get it. And that's the frustrating thing for me, is that we haven't put up a fight, that we were so good at. We were so flipping good. I'm not going to swear, otherwise you have to press the button. At Stockport. Stockport weren't expecting us to rock up there and play a front four and get at them from minute one. It was arrogant of us. It was brilliant. I loved it. And then to not be able to back that up in any way, shape or form for against a team that was there for the taking. That's horrendous. And now you have to do it against a side in decent nick in Altrincham. Notts County were in horrible nick. Altrincham are in pretty good nick. They're like a place outside the playoffs. They are third in the form table, I think. But 1-4, lost one of the last five, scored 12 goals, conceded six. They're in pretty decent form. They have conceded a few goals recently. Grimsby put three past them. Dagenham put a couple past them. But they've gone to Altrincham and thrashed them. They beat Dagenham in that game. They did score a couple themselves against Grimsby, and they kept a clean sheet against Maidenhead yesterday. I mean, that ain't going to be easy. But you've given up the wiggle room. If we'd have beaten Maidenhead and then beaten that lot yesterday, it doesn't matter if we draw against Altrincham tomorrow night. Doesn't matter at all. Now it matters. Now you got to beat them. So we've got to have a go at them.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, yeah, this little run of four games is now a little run of two games. Talk about runs of one. You've got two pretty big runs of one coming up next.
The manager don't believe in runs, but he's on one now.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he doesn't believe in one long, poor run of form, in that case, he's got four really short runs of poor form at the moment.
Yeah.
So, fine. I don't care how he looks at it, but needs to address it because... Yeah, he's got two pretty big runs on the gun on the way to go. Altrincham and then Weymouth. It would get pretty sour if we don't beat Altrincham and then are dumped out the cup by the Seagull botherers.
You know, Saturday looks... We'll see what happens on Tuesday, but... If Saturday went wrong, I genuinely believe it could get nasty.
Yep.
It will be the type of game where you had to be there to see it. Like, car crash, ugly, can't take your eyes off it, bad. Which I don't want that.
Nope.
none of us want that. And I think, you know, there's a overarching picture here in that you've got an owner who wasn't at the game again. You've got a whole situation at the club where things are happening. No one's saying what, you know, no one's able to say where they are, what the situation is. And as a result of that, fans are going to grounds knowing that something's going on. Why is the owner not there? The manager has evidently got no money. Nothing is going to change while the current owner is there, because why is he going to get rid of his mate? He's not. I think the burger van, the pumps were broken on the burger van yesterday, so it was back to Cairns. Cairns and a cheeseburger for a fiver, which I've heard were not to the standard of a Boreham Wood burger.
Which we gave good. A 3 out of 7, yeah.
There's a cloud hanging over the club, and I'd sort of fear the worst if something doesn't happen, and for whatever reason there isn't change, we will be in big trouble. Because we've got a club bought with a loan, held against its assets. We're funded by Sport England. And there's no evidence to suggest otherwise, is there? We've got no evidence that there's anything being put into the club. And it is, you know, if a deal doesn't get done and parties walk away, we are fucked.
We're in trouble. Yeah, yeah.
There,
yeah.
I said it.
You can say you've got to press the button now to say there's naughty language in there.
Yeah.
So I could have sworn earlier and it would have been fine.
I think when, well, we weren't all together when Priestnell came in, was it? But I think at the time we probably all thought, well, I used to say to people, nothing changes till everything changes with John Fry and Norman Haywood. So everything had to change. Now, when you look at it on the face of it, when John Fry and Norman Haywood left, quite a lot did actually change. We changed the owner. The owner came in with, you know, big promises of what he was going to do. We changed the manager. We'd already changed that kind of before he arrived. And we basically changed the entire team, didn't we? And we brought in a team, which I think Darren Sell talked about that team in the first season as being one to get you straight back up again. That's what it was built for. So we did probably change everything. But in reality, we changed, with the exception of the team and the way that the team played, we changed nothing. Because off the pitch, we're in exactly the same position as we were when John Fry and Norman Haywood. In fact, that I will actually change that slightly, because at least Norman Haywood wrote a cheque. Yeah. Say what you like about Norman Haywood. And I would say, you know, the Fry-Haywood combination, I see a very similar pattern with Priestnell and Collis. One's a front man. One's, well, maybe behind the scenes, but so far behind the scenes, I don't even know where he is, hidden under a rock somewhere. But the reason that he's not there is that he simply doesn't care. He doesn't care. And for all the, you know, he came out before the season with the manager promising this and that, promising a better match day experience. It's saddled us with a load of debt. Not seeing real evidence that he's put a penny of his own money in. He doesn't turn up to games. There's no improvement in the match day experience, and we sign a load of kids. So nothing's changed, is it? Nothing's changed on it. And on the pitch, we are, you know, you've described it just now. That performance was as Darren Way as we've been. We're a mouth without teeth. So there's some things that have changed, but really nothing's changed from where we were 3 years
ago. You go back to the mid-2000s when we split everything up. Mm-hmm. And the only reason the club was bought, in my view, was for that acreage around the outside of it.
Yeah.
Until someone buys a football club because they want a football club.
Yeah.
What do we do?
I mean, I'm no expert when it comes to business or planning or any of that kind of stuff. But the idea of splitting the assets was always going to be a dangerous one for exactly the reasons that we've spoken about. At the time, I could see a logic behind doing it, in as much as if it gave you the ability to develop and it gave you the ability to develop something that could then benefit the club, you know, build a facility outside which generates a regular income. Hugh was speaking when he was on about the Saddlers Club at Walsall, which I think, yeah, Ben and I have been in, or you've probably been there as well, Ian, that, you know, fantastic club that draws in money for the... Now, if that was how it was sold to us, wasn't it? The splitting the assets was the idea that you could do these kind of things. If that is still the intention, then I absolutely agree that developing around Hewish Park is a good thing if that money goes into the club. But again, I've not seen anything that suggests anybody wants to put anything into this club except for fans who pay £50,000 into a crowdfunder.
And
go on.
Sorry. I was just going to say, and at least, a bit of a Fry and Haywood defence there, here, at least with them, Fry was a Yeovil Town fan.
Yeah.
And maybe the club wasn't the toppest of their priorities, but there was some sort of
there was a connection.
You'd feel more confident that money would go into the club because they were there.
Yeah.
But now you've got two, one from Newquay, one from Chesterfield, Turkey, I don't know, who, they don't give a shit about Yeovil Town. They don't.
No. The thing I always said about John Fry, and having known him from, well, having remembered him from his earliest days, his heart was always in the right place. I absolutely 100% believe that his heart was always in the right place. He always wanted and did what he thought in his head was best for that football club. Now, his decisions, well, you know, will be judged by history, won't they? I think particularly towards the end, he surrounded himself with people who told him he was doing the right thing, even if he actually wasn't. I 100% believe John Fry's heart was always in Yeovil Town. As you said, he was a supporter, and he wouldn't have stuck around as long as he did without it. I don't believe that's the case anymore. We've got nobody on that. You look at our directors, the two individuals that you've just mentioned there, I don't think either of them care. And that makes me think, what do they care about?
I mean, one of them might care, but he's got no stroke, say, no power to do anything.
I wouldn't even call him a puppet.
No.
Okay, right, hang on then. I feel like we've gone on a bit of a tangent there. And yeah, we're absolutely right to moan about what's happening and what's gone before and look back on anything. But it doesn't change the fact that come Tuesday night, Ian, you're going to have to wander up to Huish Park, okay?
Yay.
And watch that team again in a massive, massive game. So, question for you then. What has to happen in the next 48 hours by the time this goes out on Monday morning? What on Monday is going to happen that renders this conversation out of date? What can somebody within the club say, do, what happens immediately, what immediate fixes can take place that mean, because we have got to look forward, you can't keep looking back, it's gone. So what has to happen? Who has to say what statements do we want? What, how do you get to Huish Park with a bit of a bounce in your step? Genuine question.
A public statement of intent
from
the owner,
the parties involved in discussions.
Okay, fine. Okay, yeah. That's a good one.
Where's the owner? Where's the owner in all of this?
Is that what you're looking for, Dave?
He's got to come out and say something. He came out before the season promising this, that, and the other, and then he's done exactly what he did last season, and he's disappeared. He's disappeared, and with no evidence to back up anything that he's doing. It's all just words, isn't it? It's just. It's dream topping. It looks pretty on the outside, but it's got no substance to it.
Okay then. They're the words. Physically, what needs to happen? Do you need to rock up and the bars be fixed? Need a match day experience that's better? I'm thinking about practical things that somebody, because there is still good people there. Pat Custard is still helping out for all of her sins. She's a legend. She's there working her ass off.
Yeah, but
and
volunteers.
You've got good people like, well, not even just the volunteers. You've got Sam there. You've got Mark in the media team and the commercial team that have done good stuff.
Yeah,
what can they physically do?
Without
there's no leadership.
Without any without any investment.
It can't
comes from the top, doesn't it?
That you can't make the changes that need to be made.
Good because, people are getting screwed over time and time again.
Yeah.
Should we go in the questions? Because I think some of these questions probably
I just wanted to shout out because of the fact that there are good people there. We're right to moan, we're right to ask questions, but let's not forever lose the point that there are good people who do have YTFC at their heart, at the club, who are working their ass off in ridiculous circumstances. And there have been others. You talk about Nick Crittenden, the most positive man in the world. He used to be on the inside and he was having a moan himself yesterday on air.
They're working.
That was unheard of.
They're all working with their hands tied behind their back.
Yeah.
The manager is as well.
Yeah. No, I do agree with that. Well, okay then. So that brings us on to one, probably our most controversial question. Because just looking through these questions, I think we've probably answered a lot of them whilst we've been discussing by luck or judgment. One from Archie Morris 87. Sal out? ?
Not yet. But these are two massive games. No points out in the FA Cup. I'm not sure it's salvageable. No. Not sure it's salvageable. It is salvageable because of what we've seen, because of what team he did put together at Stockport, of the tactics he did put together. He has got that there, and he has been hampered by a few bits and pieces. It's not easy to lose Wilkinson, Reed, and Little. That's not easy, and I appreciate that. But without two of them, he put together Stockport and got my man of the match. So,
devil's advocate, we should not have signed Mark Little and Ruben Reed.
that's not for today though. That's not for that question, is it?
No.
That's not for that question. He's put together a side that beat Halifax and dismantled Stockport. He needs to find whatever he did to motivate those lads to go and give that performance again, and he's got to go and beat Altrincham and Weymouth with that same vigour and enthusiasm. If he doesn't on either, it's not a million miles away. It feels like it's going to get nasty very, very quick, and it ain't getting easier. We've got Solihull and Grimsby away to come.
I think, not easy. Being at the game yesterday, I think the tide has turned. Because I'm a Screwfix stand sitter, and that's, you know, normally that's the stand which holds its tongue.
When that one goes.
And yesterday, you know, yesterday there was enough shouts around that, you know, suggest to me that the fans are on their way.
Yeah. I was going to say the clock is ticking, isn't it? Yeah, I think the clock has started. And I do agree. And we said it all last season. Last season was just, well, we'll just forget about what last season was. The season before, certainly the first half of it, I think we saw what Darren Searle could do with the players that he had then. Without those players and all of this crap about we all wanted a younger team, that is the not beating around the bush. We've got no money. Justification, I think, but I think he probably deserved some time based on that and what he could do. But the clock is definitely ticking, and I do think lose those next two, and you're not going to be able to lose to Weymouth. Yeah,
but let's get this clear: he's not going to go anywhere because he's not going to. No one's going to make a decision. There's no one there. No one is there to make a decision.
Nothing changes till everything changes.
No. And I don't think he can get it back, which is amazing to say. You know, when we went into Boreham Wood just 2 weeks ago, was that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How the picture has changed.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I think I don't want to put it all on one signing and one moment, but the signing of Mitch Rose feels like a moment that has sort of shifted everything.
On the face of it, you could say that, couldn't you? Yeah. But I mean, we're not behind the scenes, so we don't know that that's the case, but
we're not. But the boos on Tuesday night, or the lack of response on Tuesday night when his, you know, everybody welcome Mitch Rose and nothing. Crickets. To the post-match question and answer. To boos yesterday. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple
They were loud. I heard them on the radio.
There's a couple of things on social about interactions with him after the match as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, I feel sorry. I sort of feel sorry for the bloke because, you know, he's just signed for a football club and is there to play football. But the context around the club, the mentality, and what is, you know, the results on the pitch since his signing, it just looks like a moment that has changed the direction of fan sentiment.
And if you get rid of Mitch Rose, that ain't going to change it, is it?
I'm afraid to say he's the
damage is done.
The post match interview he's sort of made his bed and he's got a lie in it now.
Yeah.
He didn't get that one right. He didn't get that one right at all. You two have chatted about it. It's a couple of podcasts that I've missed where you two have gone into it significantly, but I've missed them both, unfortunately. But I think you guys have said everything you need to say. There's nothing about that signing. I didn't even think it was needed. Other players have had to miss out on time on the pitch or in the squads. What's Toby Stevens thinking? That could have been him in there. What's Alex Bradley thinking? That could have been him on that bench yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, you know, players that haven't battered a woman. Yeah, I'm not. I don't want him anywhere near the football club, and the manager's not made a great effort of trying to justify his position. He's here to add leadership because Luke Wilkinson isn't in the team. What? No, that's not how it works.
Is that the type of leader you want at your football club?
Yeah, and to be fair, I've been really pleased with the type of buzzword character that Darren Saller has brought in for the vast majority of times. But if he wants to talk about Mitch Rose's character, I'm fully aware of his character. A judge of the law of the land told me about his character. I don't need to know anymore. He's got that character wrong, and I don't want him anywhere near my football club.
So the question was Sal out?
No, not yet. Not yet, but he's got 180 minutes, basically.
Coach, have you answered it?
I said the clock is ticking on him, and he's probably got, these two matches, and there's no way back. Can I ask you?
No, you haven't answered it then.
Huh?
You haven't answered it then.
Well, he ain't got long. It's not Sal out now. If you're saying, do we sack him Monday morning, then no, we don't sack him Monday morning.
If a takeover went through on Monday morning, I'd have a new manager in.
Yeah, well, that's a big if, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I think that probably means I'm sold out.
That means a completely whole new scenario around the club, doesn't it? Because all this talk about what the owner's commitments and plans and future and all the rest of it are, and any money that this any new group has got, then that completely changes everything, doesn't it? So yeah, okay. If I win the lottery, no, you don't have a lottery on Sunday, do you? If I win the American Thunderball or whatever it's called, then I'll put it in and I'll give you a new manager as well.
Here's a question.
Go on.
Have Skivo take over?
No, nothing changes till everything changes.
Okay.
I'll keep saying it. And and to be fair, Skivo is the only person to the... Well, actually, so what you're saying, take over permanently?
Well, if the manager was to go...
Yeah.
And Skivo was to... Not permanently, but just, say Priestnell does make a decision and says, right, that's it, and puts Skivo in charge.
So I'll tell you what, he's not the right man permanently, but if there was someone that I would want to lead us into an FA Cup game against Weymouth, he would be the man. He would be the man. And that's proven by the fact, was it down there or at our place? He gave the rallying cry, didn't he? I remember Josh Staunton talking about it. He would be the man. But long term.
No, absolutely not long term. But I think you've got that. Yeah.
So there are a lot of ifs in that question. If this happens, if that happens, and if the other happens. But if Terry Skiverton was leading us into Weymouth in the FA Cup, I'd be all right with that. I think we've answered all the other questions, and I can't even pronounce Hugh's question. So can I? I'll try, shall I? And see what you think. This is a good way to finish. It says, judge me / us after 10 games is a much used phrase by Gary Johnson, among others. 1 week to go, ninth place Ulti on Tuesday.
Ninth game.
Oh, ninth game, Ulti on Tuesday, and 10th game, a certain Seaside team on Saturday. How much, SHM?
You can say it.
How much shit in... Well, this is something I can't say. How much shit in the post-Brexit Advoire du Poids measuring method does the panel, that's us, think will hit the fan if we lose versus Portland North? So I think he's saying how much shit's going to hit the fan if we lose to Weymouth. I think we probably said that a lot. I've still no idea what Advoire du Poids means. Must be some kind of unit of measurement, I think.
I feel like this question sort of goes into the wake me up when October starts.
Oh
question now. From Thursday.
That is a way to finish. Come on then, Ben. You've had since Thursday to think about this one.
So I did, and I'm quite happy to stand by the fact,
Talk into your mic, Ben. Talk into your mic.
I was quite happy to play that card at the start of the season and wake me up to the negativity when September ends. September's come to an end and we're just below mid-table, but we are three games behind others. And as you all know, we are going to win all of our three games in hand.
away at Wrexham and away at Chesterfield. Yeah.
yeah. there are a few teams, I think, who are going to start rolling dice soon. Southend have rolled their dice. Phil Round's gone. And I look at others around. I think Torquay, they're going to be thinking they'd probably prefer to be a little bit higher than they are currently, but they have hit sort of questionable patches. But for the vast majority, Kings Lynn are towards the bottom, Wilson are towards the bottom, the Seagull Botherers are towards the bottom, Dover are obviously at the bottom. And the teams that we kind of thought about towards the top, we knew Grimsby were going to be in there, Halifax, Chesterfield, good teams, Solihull towards the top, Notts County getting going a little bit. Wrexham probably been a little bit disappointing, but that's because everyone wants to beat Wrexham because it's hilarious. Are we in a position where, I mean, we're closer to your two predictions than mine, probably, at this point.
One place below my prediction at the moment.
Yeah. The gap to Altrincham is 8 points. And we have just the one game on them. And that's the disappointment for me. So when we play them, if we beat them, we're still only 5 points behind them. And they're a team that I think would be in the same sort of boat as us, as saying, if we have a good crack at it and get a bit of luck and all the rest of it, we can sneak in seventh, eighth place here. And I look at other teams. Eastleigh would be one of those teams. Woking would be one of those teams where they're kind of thinking, if things go our way and we get a good run of it, we can sneak in. And I thought we were going to be at the top end of that bunch in behind your big 7-8. And we haven't really shown it so far. We've shown it in glimpses. I'm hoping it's the norm. Yeah, I'm hoping it's not the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah.
That was a genuine pleasure to watch. I felt so good after watching that game. And off the back of that gritty, horrible, bullying Halifax win, that was like, okay, this is a Yeovil I can get behind. And we've covered it a lot, haven't we, how something's clearly changed. A couple of injuries, a couple of players getting moved around, and a couple of signings sort of to try and bolster some ranks have been disappointing. So at the moment, instead of being top of that extra little group, we're at the bottom of it. And if the next couple of games don't go right, yeah, you guys will probably be able to put egg on my face as a result of it. So September is over and I've hit the snooze button for two more games.
Wake him up when October ends.
Nah. I knew that was the lyric, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if that's dodging the question really quite well, though, isn't it? But I think the overriding feeling is, let's not underestimate how big these next two games are, because to go on a 4-game home streak and pull up nothing as a result of it, to come out of this 4-game home streak without even scoring a goal, would be horrendous. Let's get that absolutely spot on. It would be. Yeah, and that almost, yeah, even I would turn then. Easy as that. It is.
Yeah.
You can't not score against 10-man Maidenhead. You can't not score against Notts County side who have conceded 7-2 and don't know whether they're coming or going. And then expect to back that up without landing a punch on either Altrincham or Weymouth. So massive, massive week. Huge week.
Yeah, a very, very big week.
Massive.
Something has to give.
Yep. Massive.
Right, guys.
Finish with the word massive.
All I'll say is go well this week, lads. It could be anything.
And with a quick turn, skipper Alex Dock slams it in.
There's Lindegaard making Forrest back pedal. Davis looking to help it into the path of Morris, expanding by the deflection. It's Aaron Davis. He could win it. He probably has won it for Yeovil.
Oh, and it's an opening goal. What a start. Madden, after just 6 minutes, gives Yeovil the lead.
Stansfield, good turn away from Trott. Goal!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.